At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you very much for tuning in to the Darkness on the Edge of Town radio show, live on 1470 KLBB, and also on darknessradio.com. Tonight we have two guests with us that will discuss their experiences with the mysteries of the Bermuda Triangle. We have Bruce Gernon and Rob McGregor. They've written a new book called The Fog, and it's an exploration into the new theory on the strange occurrences that surround the Bermuda Triangle. Bruce Gernon is a pilot and has formed his groundbreaking theory after not just one, but many firsthand experiences he's been a part of. And Rob McGregor has written several books and has won the Edgar Allan Poe Award in mystery writing. They've both studied and researched the Triangle for the better part of their lives, and both men live in South Florida, right on the edge of the Bermuda Triangle. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Hello.
How are you?
Great.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us this evening. First off, I just want to say I really enjoyed your book. I got a copy of the book a few weeks ago that I could peruse through and read, and it's a great book. It's one of those you-can't-put-down type books, so there's perfect little stories in there to kind of tell you about the history of the Bermuda Triangle, not only your experiences, but other experiences that have occurred. And I was blown away by a lot of the facts that you represented. First of all, I wasn't aware that Christopher Columbus and Charles Lindbergh had also had experiences in the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, Christopher Columbus may not have discovered America, but he might have discovered the Bermuda Triangle.
Now, what exactly, how do we know this for certain at this point?
Well, this is from his log. He was very meticulous in keeping a log on his journey, and this was on his journeys. In fact, this was his first one in 1492, and he was first happened when he was in the Sargasso Sea, which is on the edge of the Bermuda Triangle, and he saw a lot of seaweed, and he was thinking he was very close to land, but he couldn't see any land at all. And then he noticed his compass was spinning in circles, and this is something that is all throughout the history of the Bermuda Triangle, all the sagas. The spinning compass is where it usually starts out. And so later on, he was during the night, he and a crew member were awake and saw a large glowing ball of light hovering above the sea, and it would vanish, reappear, vanish, reappear, and then it would go up and down. And Columbus, who was a very mystical person, actually considered this as like a sign, and 4 hours later, they spotted land for the first time.
Wow. Now, is that, he had kept that, did I read it correctly, he kept that kind of quiet until after his exploration because he wanted to keep the funding coming in?
I'm not sure. No, he put it in his logbook. I'm not sure how much it was very publicized. But the case with Lindbergh, he kept...
What it was, right. I remembered one of them was kind of skeptical about talking about it once it occurred. What happened with Charles Lindbergh?
Yes, with Lindbergh, I can relate to him being a pilot like he was. He didn't want to talk about it, like Rob was saying, because some people just don't like to talk about the paranormal or anything related to it. So he would not discuss it. Something happened to him that was similar to this fog that happened to me. And he was flying in 1928, and he took off from Havana, Cuba, in the middle of the night, and he was crossing the Florida Straits, and he was only maybe 30 miles away from the area that I was at over the Great Bahama Bank, when I had this experience in 1970, and he encountered this fog, and he kept it a secret up until just before he died. He wrote it in his memoirs, and then he wrote his last book. It was published 2 years after he died, and he told the story in great detail of what this fog was like and how strange it was and how he couldn't understand it. One of the reasons he didn't want to talk about it, and he was in it for like 3.5 hours, and he was supposed to fly over to Florida, and he didn't get there for 3.5 hours when this fog finally detached from him, and then he was somewhere near Stewart when he finally escaped this fog.
Yeah, he first thought he was coming into the Florida Keys, but then realized he was over the Bahamas at one point.
Well, it's just amazing to me the things that have happened to, you know, big name people involved in this. It's not just you know, Joe Blow that's puttering through on a little, you know, airline or a little boat that vanishes in this. This has happened to major people that people would respect and understand. And that's what I really appreciated about your book. You were able to bring a lot of these stories out that, you know, I mean, I've seen specials from time to time on the Bermuda Triangle and happened to notice you showing up on a couple of those recently too, Bruce. They don't usually talk about the more famous people. The only one that I know that always mentioned is the Flight 19, of course.
Right.
But now I know in the 70s, you know, I was a kid in the 70s when it really seemed to spike the popularity of the Bermuda Triangle. But ever since then, it seems to have kind of, I don't know if it's worn thin or people just dismiss it, but there's still things going missing in the Bermuda Triangle constantly. Is that correct?
Yeah, in fact, there's actually the interest has really picked up in the last couple of years because there has been continual documentaries being produced. We know about this because they inevitably contact Bruce because his story is so unique. And so I don't know how many have been on, about a dozen, Bruce?
Yes, I think it's about a dozen, and then we've got two more coming up.
Fantastic. You were also part of the miniseries, weren't you, on the Sci-Fi Channel, the Triangle?
Well, I was on the two-hour documentary that they filmed.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm just, like I said, I was blown away by the fact that that it's still occurring and there's just not as much hype about it today as there used to be.
Right. We find cases occasionally, but, you know, it's not, when the cases happen, it's not immediately, oh, this is a Bermuda Triangle experience. It's a case of something happening where a plane disappears and you don't really know what has happened for a long time. For example, in February of 2001, there was a case of a very interesting case because it involved a Coast Guard auxiliary pilot who was being trailed by the Coast Guard, several Coast Guard airplanes. And what he was doing, they were practicing a drug interdiction training program. So he was like the drug carrier, and the Coast Guard planes were following him. And suddenly he was a couple miles off of shore. I think it was near Fort Lauderdale. Or was it further south, Bruce?
He was down in an area near Flamingo. It's right on the tip of the Everglades, Florida Bay.
Right. Why don't you go ahead and tell the story? You know it a little better than I do.
Well, I'll tell you what. If we could, we're going to take our first commercial break. We'll bring it right back. We'll hear about that, and then we want to go into Bruce's tale of what happened to him while he was in the Bermuda Triangle. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town radio show with our special guests, Rob McGregor and Bruce Gernon, authors of the book The Fog.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine & Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
I know I didn't have an anal probe, and I know that I am not under alien control.
Now it's your turn.
Strange things happen in the darkness on the edge of town.
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town radio program. This evening, our very special guests are authors Rob McGregor and Bruce Gernon with their brand new book, The Fog. It's a never-before-published theory of the Bermuda Triangle phenomenon. You were right in the middle of a story here. I'll shut up and let you guys continue on with what you were telling us.
Yes, that was about a pilot named Casey Purvis, and I remember the night it happened well because I had been watching the weather that night. I'd been doing a lot of flying in between Palm Beach and Florida Keys, and the weather was just absolutely perfect that night. And I was thinking to myself, gee, I'd like to fly there tonight. But he was also like a neighbor of mine. He flew out of the same airport that I learned to fly at, called Lantana Airport, kept his plane there, and he rendezvoused with the Coast Guard down near the Florida Keys. And they would play a game of cat and mouse, has to do with drug dealers. And he had a little Piper Warrior that he would fly, a little single-engine plane, and they'd fly around and follow him in their Citation jet, and he'd try to get away from them. And he had done this at night many times with them, like 20 times or so. This was another night, a routine night for them, and when he got over the edge of the glades near Flamingo, they have the radar reports and the audio all on record. He reported to the Coast Guard that he could see the town of Marathon, which was 25 miles away, and he was at 1,600 feet. And that just gives you an indication of how clear the sky was then.
Sure.
They told him to head north, and then they'd catch up with him. They were a few miles away over the Everglades. So about 1 minute later, he calls him back, and he says, "It's getting a bit misty." And then 30 seconds later, he calls him again, and he says, "I've gone IMC, which means instrument meteorological conditions exist, and he can't see any horizon or sky or water, and he's flying by instruments alone."
This just came up on him all of a sudden?
Yeah.
Okay.
In this perfectly clear night.
And the other pilots aren't experiencing this at all?
No, they didn't experience anything, and he told them not to follow him. Some reason. And then
yeah,
he went
it was very
through,
strange. He said, "Stay away from me."
Yeah. They got it all on radar. He went through a series of turns. He made about six turns left and right. And then finally he did like what many pilots have done that have been caught in this fog. He did the graveyard spiral, nosedived right into the ocean and died.
Oh, that's horrible. But that is the type of things that is believed to commonly happen to these pilots that are overtaken by this electronic fog, as you coined it. They lose touch and they end up spiraling down into the water?
It happens to many of them because I believe what it does is it actually induces spatial disorientation. There's dozens and dozens of cases of spatial disorientation where pilots have gone into a fog. Now, maybe a lot of the time it was real fog, but other times it may have been this electronic fog, which is different than normal fog, and it becomes so confusing that it disorients your mind.
Now let's get into that. Now the electronic fog is something that you've brought about in your book, and you've kind of coined the phrase. Let's find out a little bit about what happened to Bruce with his flight. And this took place in December of 1970. Is that right?
Right, December 4th, 1970.
Okay, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure, I'll tell you the story about it. But this is the story about the mother storm, or the time storm that creates this electronic fog. It's much larger than the fog. If the fog is really just like a patch of smoke, it may be only an acre in size. Mother storm is about 40 miles in diameter, And there's a guy that has recently actually captured this on radar up in your area in Indiana. So I believe this can happen anywhere in the world, but it happens more in the Bermuda Triangle area, and that's probably because magnetism there is weaker there than any place else on Earth. That's recently been discovered by Swedish scientists.
Okay. Now, with that said, I'm just curious about one thing. Let's map this out for people that may not be familiar exactly where the triangle is. Where exactly are the points of the triangle?
Well, let Rob explain that. He's done a lot of geography on this.
Right. Okay. It's Miami, Puerto Rico, and Bermuda. But that's you know, just a theoretical line forming a triangle. But these experiences have happened outside of that triangle up into the Carolinas, and so that's, you know, we use that term, the Bermuda Triangle, because that's what's come into common use. But it's not really a triangle per se.
Yeah, that's was the second part of my question here. Is I thought that I'd read that most of the occurrences actually don't take place right in the triangle, but right outside of the triangle in different areas.
A lot of them take place inside, but there are a number that take place outside. A lot of them actually take place very near Andros Island, which is where Bruce's experience took place and where Flight 19 took place, and it's right at in the heart of the Bermuda Triangle. And Bruce's story is very interesting, what happened to him.
Great. Well, let's hear your story then, Bruce.
Okay. Well, it was 3 p.m., actually exactly 3 p.m., when I lifted off at the airport at Andros Island. It was called Fresh Creek Airport, and that's where the Autech Navy base has a thing going on with RCA, where they do research. And I had a good friend that was working there as a mathematical scientist. And when I lifted off, I remember waving to him as I turned over the terminal building and then started heading at 1,000 feet and headed right for Bimini. I was using my automatic directing finder to aim toward Bimini, and then a compass, and also we had VOR equipment back then. And it was overcast, so I had to maintain 1,000 feet. Did that for about 10 minutes, stayed over the island of Andros. And then when I reached the shoreline of the Great Bahama Bank, the overcast appeared to only be over the island of Andros. Back then, we couldn't get a weather report because there weren't any telephones on the island of Andros. It looked clear to the east, and I started to accelerate or climb up at 1,000 feet per minute. Just when I started that, I saw this first sign of this strange storm, and it was a cloud that looked like a lenticular cloud, but they only form at very high altitude.
Usually they're on the top of mountains, actually, and they look like a big UFO, actually.
Yes, they have silky edges.
Cloud.
And they're frisbee shaped. It was like a mile long, maybe a half mile wide, and about 1,000 feet thick, but it was hovering just 500 feet above the ocean, and it wasn't moving, and it looked harmless, so I went ahead and climbed right over it because it was in my flight path. And a better name for this cloud would be a bubble cloud, because as soon as I got on top of it, it started spreading out at an amazing rate. And at first, I wasn't paying real close attention to it because I had to contact Miami Radio, file my flight plan, and get a weather report. And they said the weather's fine between Andros and Miami. And there were some scattered storms over South Florida, but they wouldn't be too much of a problem for me.
May I ask real quickly at this point, how many years of experience had you had as a flyer?
I've been flying 6 years at this point.
Okay, so you certainly knew what you were doing. This wasn't something that you were just a novice in the air with us the first time.
Right. I had about 600 hours of flight time. And
plus, his father was with him, who was an experienced pilot.
Yeah, our dad was a licensed pilot and a co-pilot, navigator. And I had made about 50 flights to the Bahamas. And I had made this flight round trip about a dozen times previous to Andros and back, because we were working on a project there to develop a resort. And after I found my flight plan, then I concentrated more on what was happening all around me, and I saw that this cloud was actually spreading out faster than I was traveling. And I was traveling at 105 miles an hour, and this storm had spread out faster than that. It was beyond as far as I could see. And I calculate today that it actually spread out at close to 300 miles an hour.
Wow.
But it really wouldn't be a 300-mile-an-hour wind, though. It would be more of an ignition. It would be like taking a can of gasoline and pouring a huge circle, and then just ignite it on one end, and then it's going to spread out and form like a ring.
Sure.
And meet on the other end. Of course, I didn't realize that's what was going on at this time, so I kept climbing up, and then the cloud caught up to me, and I'm climbing 1,000 feet per minute, and then it buries me, and I get inside of it. And it looked like a typical cloud at this point. Visibility was only 50 feet or at the most. And I was on instruments, but only in there for about 30 seconds. Then I would break free of it, and it was like it was kind of boosting me up. And I'd get about 100, 200 feet above it, but then I couldn't stay there because it would catch back up to me again. This went on for about five more times. Finally, my dad just said to me, well, we better turn around, do a 180, and go back to Andrus. And I was getting ready to agree with him. I was almost ready to go ahead and make the turn. But then we popped out at 11,500 feet. And when I looked back to the sides, I couldn't believe what I was seeing here. This little bubble cloud had spread out as far as I could see on either side of me, which was 10 miles either way. And it was building up faster than I was climbing. And it was strange looking because I noticed that it had like a perfect shape to it.
So it was like inside of a donut, a huge donut.
Yeah. It was really symmetrical.
That is a perfect shape, a donut.
So I leveled off at 11,500 and started cruising, high-speed cruise at 195 miles an hour. And so now I had been flying for 20 minutes, and I was still on the planned flight path direct to Bimini, and then we're planning to go from Bimini to Palm Beach International. You know, I had done this many times before, and the flight usually took about an hour and a half, and cruised, and then and just a few minutes later, I look in front of me, and I can't believe what I'm seeing again here. Here's this huge cloud, but now it had built up to over 40,000 feet high, and it had that same perfect circular shape to it, only now the circle is in front of me, on either side of me, as far as I can see. And another strange thing about it was the bottom of it. I was thinking, well, maybe I'll fly under it, but I couldn't fly under it. It came right out of the ocean. It didn't have any ceiling like a normal cloud would or a base.
Unreal.
It seemed to be coming right out of the ocean, almost like a fog bank. But fog banks wouldn't go up this high. So I stayed on my flight path, and I penetrated into it. And when I went inside, there wasn't any rain. And visibility reduced to 2-3 miles. And then these strange flashes started appearing. And they became very intense. The deeper I went, the more intense they became. Got to the point where it was almost like black and white. It was in a strobe effect in a random pattern. Too intense and full of electricity. So I decided, after being in there only about 20, 30 seconds, to make a turn and get out. So I turned to the left, headed due south, and got out of there. And as soon as I got out, I contacted Miami Radio, and I told them that I was about 100 miles to the east of them, and I'm going to deviate from my flight path and head due south, because there's a big storm, and I'm going to see if I can fly around it, and I'll get back with them later. So they told me fine, and I started heading south along the edge of this storm, and then I noticed that this storm curved right back to where I had come from. So then I realized that I was caught inside this circular-shaped storm with no way out. Then I noticed where the two ends had met, like where, when I explained to you how it ignited on one end and then formed that
right
donut-shaped circle, and where the circle met on the opposite end, I noticed that it had connected on the bottom, but the top had not connected yet. It was like a big U-shape opening when I first saw it, and it was headed right toward Miami to go through it, and it was clear sky on the other side, so I figured, well, I'll shoot through there. But then these anvil heads formed on the top of each cloud, and then the two anvil heads met each other, and it formed this huge horizontal tunnel about 12 miles or more long, and it was up at about 10,000 feet high. And I'm at 11.5, so I decided, well, I'm going to dive down and go through it. I noticed it was starting to close, so I went to full power. And now I had been flying for 29 minutes, and my dad agreed with me to go ahead and we'd take the chance and shoot through this tunnel.
And if we can, we're going to take a quick break. Come back, and I want to hear what happened. This is an amazing part of the story to me. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town radio show. Our special guests this evening are Rob McGregor and Bruce Gernon, authors of the book The Fog.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
If it weren't for ghosts and aliens, these guys wouldn't be getting any action at all.
Yeah, baby! Yeah.
I threw up in my mouth a little bit.
Welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us this evening. With us, we have two very special guests, Rob McGregor and Bruce Gernon, the authors of The Fog, a never-before-published theory of the Bermuda Triangle phenomena. And right now we're in the middle of Bruce's story of what actually occurred to him back in December of 1970. And Bruce, I'm going to turn it back over to you because, as I had mentioned before the break, this is the part of the story I found completely amazing. So I'll shut up and let you continue on.
Okay. So I was diving down, and I picked up the speed, the full power, 230 miles an hour at the red line, and I aimed for the center of this tunnel that was rapidly getting smaller. And I can remember while I was aiming for it, I thought back to my first flight instructor at ground school one night. He had told us about tunnels that formed up in the higher levels, up like at 10,000 feet, that formed in between two big thunderstorms. And he said to never fly through one, because he had known of a pilot that had flown through one and disappeared. And I assumed that he had crashed, you know, but maybe he did really disappear. But I didn't have time to think too much about that, and I went ahead and shot into the entrance of this tunnel. And then immediately upon penetrating the tunnel, I witnessed an amazing event. Instantly, these long lines formed all around the edges of the tunnel. And it was like looking down a rifle barrel and seeing the rifling. And it was slowly rotating counterclockwise, only a few miles per hour. And these lines were like hovering off the walls of the tunnel, which had like a silvery lining, and each cloud was about the size of a bus or a minibus, and they were sort of like broken apart in a series of lines to form these swirling lines. And I had the wing leveler on, and I kept it on, and it's a good thing I did, because I probably would have had a hard time keeping it level, but I maintained the dead center of this tunnel that appeared to be over 12 miles long. And I believe that these lines that I was seeing were actually part of the fabric of space-time. I like to call them timelines, because time was changing while this was happening to me, because I reached the other end of this tunnel in only 20 seconds, and it should have taken over 3 minutes to reach the other end. And when I reached the other end, the tunnel had reduced from, it was maybe 500 feet when I entered it in diameter, down to only 30 feet, because the wingtips scraped the edges of it when I reached the other end. And then when I looked back, I saw that there were these long contrails on each of the wingtips behind the airplane. And I watched the tunnel slowly collapse right behind me. And now it was rotating clockwise, looking at it from the other end. And I entered this clear blue sky when I got out of the tunnel, but I only got to see this sky for like 1 or 2 seconds, because instantly everything turned this dull gray color. And at the same time, I felt the only real sensation that I felt that was related to this flight, and that was a feeling of like zero gravity, and it lasted like a whole 10 seconds, and it was like we were floating and going forward in space at the same time. It was hard to understand, and this is that electronic fog that we were talking about at the beginning that was so confusing for me. I mean, it took me 31 years to really figure out why this is so strange, and basically it's because the fog captures the aircraft. It's not like normal fog, and no pilot had ever thought of this before, and talked to many of them and read them stories from many of them, but none of them had ever realized that this fog was attached to them. You see, it's like St. Elmo's fire, similar to that. It forms like a shroud or a cocoon around the airplane, and it flies with the airplane.
So it seems like you're in miles and miles of fog, when actually it might just be a pocket, like a pair of hands surrounding your plane, following with you.
That's what it has to be, because it took me so many years to figure that out. And then when I finally thought of that, it answered all these questions that I had in my mind for so many years that I couldn't answer. It all made sense, because somehow, after I got out of this fog, just 3 minutes later, I made it to Miami Beach. And I never saw the blue sky the whole time. So.
And the amazing part is, how long did it take you to get to Miami Beach?
Well, it took just over 3 minutes to fly 100 miles.
That's just amazing. I mean, it's like you ripped through a portion of space and time to actually come through this.
Exactly. Or I was traveling at 2,000 miles an hour, which the airplane's not capable of doing.
Wow. Now, the other thing that I found amazing is you did that, and to back it up that maybe you weren't just discombobulated and actually had flown for longer, the gas tanks had actually not depleted like they should have, correct?
That's right. Yes, I studied this with my physics teachers in college years later, and they thought of that a few years later, and I went through my old records and discovered that I had burned 10 gallons less fuel on this trip than the previous 12 flights that I had made before. And then the trip only took 48 minutes, and the fastest I had ever done it before was an hour and 20 minutes, and that was more of a direct route. I didn't fly a direct route on this one. I also had to go way out west over the Everglades to get around one of those big storms that weather.
There was also a period of time where Bruce didn't have any electronic instruments. All nothing was working. The compass was spinning around. None of the electronic equipment was working. Finally, the radio came on back on, and contacted the Miami Tower, and they couldn't find him. They said there's nobody out there, and that's when Bruce's father got really upset. He said, "What do you mean you can't see us out here?" And Bruce said, "We should be near Bimini." But then all of a sudden, the guy in the tower says, "Wait a minute, there's a plane coming in over Miami Beach." And Bruce said, "Well, that couldn't possibly be us." And then this cloud, electronic fog broke up, and he could see below him Miami Beach.
That's amazing. We're going to take our last break here real quick. We're with authors Rob McGregor and Bruce Gernon as they share their stories in their new novel, The Fog.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms. At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
You hear footsteps and things bumping and banging in the middle of the night. Could it be paranormal activity? Or is it just Dave and Tim raiding your fridge?
Beer.
Strange things happen in the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to the radio show. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town show with your hosts Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis. This evening we've got Rob McGregor and Bruce Gernon, the authors of The Fog. And I apologize, before the break I mentioned it was a novel. It's actually a true factual example of incidents that have occurred in the Bermuda Triangle. And as we just heard, Bruce Gernon's actual account of what occurred to him on this one attempt. Now, Bruce, you've also... you've been in this before, and you've had other strange experiences occur and happen around you. Is that correct?
Yes, I've had another experience that's similar in the Florida Keys. It was the electronic fog.
See, now that would have been enough for me. One example into this and coming through time that quickly and creepiness and clouds and losing control of all of my controls. I'd have found another mapped plan to get around that whole area.
I think one interesting thing about Bruce's second experience was that he was able to see a tunnel as he was flying through this fog. He was able to see the ocean like there was a tunnel underneath him. And as he kept flying through the fog, this tunnel seemed to move right along with him. And that is what helped him come up with the idea of the electronic fog, and that it's clinging to the airplane and moving with the airplane, because he couldn't figure out why he didn't fly past this open area, but it continued along with him.
See, that's completely amazing. Now, I understand if you're a solo pilot out there in a one little plane doing this, you know, that you could easily get disoriented, lost, and this happens. But can you gentlemen tell me real quickly, we're wrapping up the show here, but Flight 19, back in the 40s, that was actually a squadron of planes that vanished altogether. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And what's interesting to me is that they were only about, at one point, only 5 miles or so away from where I was when I went through this tunnel and gate with this electronic fog attached to me. And it was also the same time I entered that tunnel at 3:30 in the afternoon, and their first radio report was at 3:30 in the afternoon that they were confused, the compass didn't seem to be working. And,
how many planes in all vanished with that flight?
Same situation as me. There were a fleet of five, and they were the only ones that have really ever been in formation flight when this fog had attached to all five of them.
And they just vanished, and there was no floating debris. There was nothing left. No idea exactly what happened to these planes. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, I think, though, that they finally may have escaped the fog, but by the time they did that, they were so far over the ocean that they had to crash.
Oh.
The lead pilot experienced the compass circling around and around and around and became totally disoriented. But if they're in all the transmissions, if the other pilot's compass were working, nobody ever said, nobody ever seemed to recognize that or acknowledge it.
And the big mistake they made, which many pilots have made and ended up in the same situation as them, is that they started making a series of turns. You see, when I got caught in this fog, I never made one turn. I knew I was aiming right for Miami, so I maintained that heading the whole time and never made a turn. See, what happens is, if you make one turn, that's going to start to compound your orientation into disorientation.
Well, that makes complete sense. So you make a couple of turns, and all of a sudden you might be flying right back into the heart of what you were just trying
That's
to get out
right.
of.
You become totally lost and disoriented.
That's crazy. Now, during the break, Bruce and Rob were able to tell me if you have an interest in the Bermuda Triangle and more of this, you can visit bermudatriangle.org. And if you go to our website under the show, you should be able to see a copy of their book, The Fog. You can click on that link and actually go order it directly from Llewellyn Press. We'll also have a copy of that link well after the show in the tab on our website at Darkness Radio under The Others, which is links to our past guests and their items, books, radio shows, whatever else that we might be talking about. Gentlemen, this is amazing, and I really appreciate that you've put this down in book form for people to read. Again, just real briefly, about how many crafts, air, or boats vanish a year, would you say, into the Bermuda Triangle?
Bruce, can you make an estimate on that?
Well, not that many. I would think maybe only one or two.
But it's still occurring every year.
And it's,
yes.
Wow.
It's not something that is like a hurricane, that there's a season for the Bermuda Triangle and that it happens on a particular time of year or anything. And it's so... And it makes it very difficult for scientists to measure it, to document it, because it is such a mysterious phenomenon.
And your book is available everywhere, correct? And you can get it on Amazon.com as well?
Correct.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much, both of you, Rob McGregor and Bruce Gernon, for joining us this evening and talking about your book, The Fog, A Never-Before-Published Theory of the Bermuda Triangle Phenomena. It's been a wonderful experience talking to you. I appreciate it, and I'd love to talk to you again in the future about more about your book and more experiences that you do have.
Great.
Okay. Thanks, David.
Thank you, gentlemen. This evening's special guests were Rob McGregor and Bruce Gernon, authors of The Fog, A Never-Before-Published Theory of the Bermuda Triangle Phenomena. Tonight, we were only able to scratch the surface of their book, so make sure you go out, pick up a copy for yourself. You're going to love it. We want to put out some special thanks to our sponsors this evening, and especially Evolve Systems for their work they do hosting and maintaining our website at darknessradio.com. Visit them on the web to help you take your business to the next level at evolve-systems.com. Make sure to join us next week when our very special guest in the Darkness on the Edge of Town is Steve Gonsalves, one of the stars of the sci-fi TV show Ghost Hunters. He'll be talking to us about the TV show, Taps Para Magazine, which he is in charge of, and also some of his own experiences in the world of ghost hunting. We appreciate you listening to the show. This is your host, Dave Schrader, along with board monkey Tim Dennis. We hope to have you back with us next week. You're listening to AM 1470 KLBB, Brooklyn Park.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator. Roll with the sausage breakfast burrito. Buddy it up with a honey buddy. Or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes. And then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.